Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Dan Snow's History Hit. I'm just recording podcasts and films for the History Hit podcast and the TV channel, historyhit.tv. We just had James Holland back in. Second World War legend for a proper grilling about the air war. We've had Hayley Nolan talking about Anne Boleyn. We're going to be discussing whether or not Hitler did in fact die in the bunker in Berlin. Of course he did. We're going to be debunking the conspiracy theories, what we're going to be doing. So all sorts going on today. But I'm here to talk to you about a very different podcast. This one that's coming up, it features the Dutch historian and writer, Sophie Poldermans. She tells the most extraordinary story of three young women who joined the resistance after the Netherlands fell to Nazi German forces 80 years ago this spring. These three young women, Hanny Schaft and the sisters Truus and Freddy Overstegen, with astonishing bravery joined the resistance, carried out various tasks, but one of them was to seduce German officers, take them into the woods and kill them. It's really one of the most extraordinary wartime stories that I've heard. You can go onto History Hit TV. You can use the code POD6, P-O-D-6, and you get 6 weeks for free of History Hit TV. If you go over and sign up with the code POD6, P-O-D-6, we have hundreds of documentaries on there. We've got new ones going up all the time. We've got record numbers of subscribers coming in at the moment, so thank you very much to everybody. We're really trying to build the world's best history channel, and we couldn't do it without you. It's very, very exciting. So use the code POD6. Thank you also, everyone, for listening to my whining and pleas about rating the podcast. It's so annoying when podcasters do it, but you got to do it. Thank you for giving it 5-star ratings and writing kind reviews. I really, really appreciate it. Hundreds of you have done that. It's very generous. It's very generous. I really appreciate it. In the meantime, everybody, here is Sophie Poldermans. Sophie, thank you so much for coming on the podcast.
It's very nice to be here. Thank you.
You have written a truly remarkable story. So tell me about the subjects of this book.
It's about three teenage Dutch girls, Hanny Schaft and the sisters, Truus and Freddy Overstegen. And they were very young teenagers. They were only 19, 16 and 14 at the beginning of World War II. And then when Nazi Germany occupied the Netherlands in May 1940, they were faced with the question what to do, to adapt or to resist. And it's very remarkable that these three girls literally took up arms in order to combat the enemy. So they joined the armed resistance, and that's what makes this story so unique.
How do you join the resistance, or rather, how did they join the resistance? What was the process?
Well, of course, it started very gradually, the three girls didn't know each other at the time yet. They met in 1943. So Hanny Schaft, she was actually a very shy girl growing up in the city of Haarlem. And Haarlem is about 12 miles west of Amsterdam. And then she studied law in Amsterdam. Because ideals like justice and peace were instilled in her. Already in 1939, when Holland was not even part of the war yet, but when Nazi Germany occupied Poland, Hanny decided to send parcels to Polish officers through the International Red Cross. So she started very early. And actually the Overstegen sisters, they grew up in the same city of Haarlem, and they lived with their mother, who was divorced at the time, which was unique for that time frame. and their little stepbrother. They grew up in a tiny workers' house, and they already offered shelter to German Jewish refugees in 1934. So that is actually 6 years before the beginning of the war. So that's how it started with these girls. And then gradually, from smaller things, they joined the armed resistance in 1943.
What did they do in the resistance?
Well, they started out small. Like Honey started in Amsterdam when she was studying. So she would go to also in Haarlem when she was still living with her parents. She would go into all kinds of public places like theaters and swimming pools, and she would steal identification papers for Jewish people in hiding. So she would give these identification papers to the resistance, and they would forge them and make sure that her Jewish friends would get those papers. And yeah, it really started with small acts. Also, when Jews were not allowed to in parks anymore, Honey was very fierce about that. And she said, well, if they are not allowed to go through the park anymore, I won't either. And then in she still was studying law. But then in February 1943, all students at the Dutch universities had to sign a declaration of loyalty. And that meant that they had to be loyal to the German regime. And that was way too far for Honey, so she did not sign. And well, that meant that she could not study anymore, so she moved back to Haarlem with her parents. Then she really wanted to do more than just the identification papers. She really wanted to offer armed resistance. So she told people around her, okay, I want to do more, I want to resist more, if necessary, with weapons. That was the summer of 1943. And then she registered with the Council of Resistance, and that is the Dutch group, or the resistance group in Haarlem, where Truus and Freddy were already members.
And that's where they all met?
That's where they all met, yes.
So, but what did they do to resist?
Well, they would provide Jewish children, for example, with safe houses, so they would really bring them from one safe house to another. And because they were women, they were not very suspicious at all. So they could easily ride around town on their bicycles with Jewish children on the back and bring them to safe places, for example. But other things, they would blow up railway tracks with dynamite. And then later on, it was the really heavier stuff, is that they would actually dress up nicely. They would wear makeup, very heavy makeup, and they would pretend to be so-called moffen girls, is what we would call them in Dutch. In English, you would say kraut girls, kraut from the German sauerkraut. And those were girls who had relationships with German officers, for example. So they would just pretend to be these girls, dress up with lots of makeup, and then go into bars, pick up these high-ranking Nazi officers, lure them into the woods here in the city forest of Haarlem in order for them to get killed by the commander of their resistance group, the Council of Resistance. And later on, they themselves would shoot Nazi targets on several occasions, often riding their bicycles and liquidating or killing them.
That's extraordinary. It sounds extremely dangerous. Well, did they come up with that, or was it a common practice at the time? Was it a tactic employed by the Dutch resistance?
Well, it was. They didn't themselves come up with it. I mean, it was part of their resistance group and the strategy. The Council of Resistance, so the resistance group that they belonged to, consisted of approximately seven main members, and sometimes they would cooperate with other regional groups. And these three girls were the only women in the group. The commander of the group was called Frans van der Wiel, and he deliberately put these three girls on this task of the seducing part and then the killing part, because, well, they could really use their youth and their femininity and their sexuality in their advantage and really in order to get these Nazi targets.
How many times did they kill German officers? How many people did they kill?
Well, we don't know the exact number. They never revealed the exact number. Truss, for example, Truss and Freddy both survived the war, and I personally knew them for 20 years, so I talked quite a bit with them. But they described the missions, but they never revealed the number. Truss always said, well, it was already bad enough that we had to do it in the first place. So it's not important what the number is. And Freddy was always very fierce, and she said, well, we were soldiers, and you cannot ask a soldier that question. And we were soldiers, I mean, little ones, but they were. So we don't know the exact numbers. But of course, I mean, they were terrified at the beginning and extremely nervous. And yeah, they really had to shoot someone. I mean, nobody is born to kill.
You said you knew them. Were they proud of what they did?
Yes, obviously they were proud, but they were extremely down to earth in the sense that they didn't see themselves as heroines at all. They really saw this as the only way of achieving justice. So in really in order to live up to their ideal of a livable world, they really had to shoot to take out these Nazi targets and traitors. Because it had to be done. That's why they did it. And they never, that's really the admirable part, that they never saw themselves as heroines. So that's really, really something.
Did they get away with it? Did they come under suspicion?
Yes. Because, well, of course they were women and they were not that suspicious, but nevertheless, in the beginning, actually, Truss, when the three girls met, Truss and Freddy actually had fled to the eastern part of the country in the Netherlands, to Enschede, because they were wanted in the area of Haarlem, because their profile was known. I mean, of course, it wasn't the days with internet or anything, but they had been seen, so they had to flee. And they were working as nurses in a hospital in Enschede at the time. And then when Honey joined the Council of Resistance, her assignment was to actually go meet these girls because Franz von der Wiel, the commander, thought, okay, these three girls will make a great team. Because it's really interesting. They were three girls from completely different backgrounds. Completely different characters. Honey was the intellectual and a bit chaotic, and Truss was very down to earth and a kind of a tomboy and a natural leader. And well, Freddy, she was still so young, but very feminine and really fierce as well. So it's really three completely different girls, but they made a great team. Honey Schaft had beautiful red hair. She was really known as the girl with the red hair, also to the Germans. And then, so at one point, she dyed her hair black, and she would wear glasses made out of window glass. So they would really have to disguise themselves because it was extremely dangerous. They carried out quite a few missions, and before they would shoot their targets, they would really try to get as much information from them as possible and pass that on to the resistance, of course, in order to save lives.
Did Hitler's sexuality shape his worldview? Why did the Black Death lead to the rise of the witch trials? And what are some of the sauciest scandals involving kings and queens at Hampton Court? I don't know about you, but this is the history I want to hear about. If you do too, then join me, Kate Lister, every Tuesday and Friday to find out the answers to all of these questions and more. Listen to Betwixt the Sheets, the History of Sex Scandal in Society, wherever you get your podcasts. Brought to you by History Hit.
Looking for the perfect gift to celebrate the moms in your life? Aura frames are beautiful, Wi-Fi connected digital picture frames that allow you to share and display unlimited photos. It's super easy to upload and share photos via the Aura app. And if you're giving an Aura as a gift, you can even personalize the frame with preloaded photos and memories. And also remember, when using messaging apps, they shrink the photos. You cannot print those out. You cannot blow them up. This is high quality imagery going to one of the most important people in your life. The Aura app is super easy to set up. It takes about 2 minutes and you're going to love it. There's free unlimited storage. Add unlimited photos and videos and invite as many people as you want to a frame. Right now, Aura has got a great deal for Mother's Day. Listeners can save on the perfect gift by visiting auraframes.com to get $30 plus free shipping on their best-selling frame. That's AURAframes.com. Use code DANSNOW at checkout to save. Terms and conditions apply. Was it known that women were shooting German officers?
Well, yes. At one point, gradually, it was known. And Hanni Schaft, I mean, the Germans also called her really the girl with the red hair. They thought that she was really a terrorist. And they knew that she was working together with these two other girls. So, yes, they were really wanted in the area, yes.
Did all three of them survive the war?
No. Truss and Freddy did. But unfortunately, Hanni Schaft was arrested and she was executed by the Nazis not even 3 weeks before the end of the war. So that is a very horrible story. She was arrested at the regular checkpoint and then she was riding her bicycle and she had to open the bag on the back of her bicycle, and then the German soldiers discovered illegal newspapers. So that's actually the reason why she was arrested. At the time, the Germans had no idea who she was. And then she was brought in for questioning and she had to open up her purse. And then the Germans discovered that she had a gun in her purse. And then they were starting to think, and then they discovered her red roots coming out of her dyed black hair. So they thought, oh, this is the girl with the red hair, the girl that we've been looking for so long. And yeah, that's why she was executed.
Wow, so she was that notorious.
Yes, she was very notorious. And actually, well, it was only 3 weeks before the end of the war, and both allies and the Germans had agreed on not shooting anyone anymore, in particular women. But yeah, unfortunately, none of the parties would stick to that agreement. And yeah, sadly enough, Hanni was executed.
What about the other two? What were their experiences like after the war? Were they traumatized by what they'd been through, what they'd done? And how were they treated?
Hanni Schaft, when she was executed, after that, she became the icon of female resistance. So she became really famous. Everybody in the Netherlands knows who she is. Really an icon like Anne Frank. Truss and Freddy survived the war, but they really had to fight for recognition. And that was partially because they were women and the role of women was underestimated and really thought that, you know, women are not capable of killing, let alone in an organized resistance group. So, yeah, they were a little bit bitter about that, especially Freddy could be really fierce about that. And then there was also another part that the Council of Resistance, their resistance group, consisted of several communist members. So especially in the Cold War, that was politically very sensitive. And both sisters have actually been shot at in 1951. They were unharmed, luckily. But so years after the war, they were actually being shot at because of their communist or their ties to this resistance group that had communist members. So they had to really fight for recognition. And Well, they received finally in 2014, so decades later, they received a war distinction cross by our Prime Minister, Mark Rutte. But yeah, really extremely late. And Truus was always, well, like I said, very down to earth. And she would really tell our Prime Minister, well, Mark, you were really kind of late with this. She could really get away with that. But they did get the recognition in the end. And Freddie was always, well, she lived a more secluded life, really focusing on her family. That was her way of dealing with the war. She was bitter about not getting the recognition. And then when Freddie died last year in September 2018, especially the American media really picked up on that. And she became really famous then. During her life, she really lacked the recognition that she was looking for. Well, like you said, they were bitter. But they were, of course, extremely traumatized because they did shoot people after all. And it's a huge dilemma. I mean, even though these were major war criminals, they were extremely young and they shot people. They took people's lives, fathers of children and mothers of children, because they also shot some women. And they had nightmares and depression, and every year around our Liberation Day, May 5th, they would always have extremely bad nightmares. Truus actually went to an institution for a while, and Freddie never or hardly ever spoke about the war. She was only opening up the last years of her life. So nightmares, depression, and what we would nowadays call PTSD was really part of their lives.
But they never expressed any regret to you?
No, never. They never regretted what they did. They were always very fierce about, that they really believed that this was the only way. There was no functioning judicial system. For them, this was the only way to achieve justice.
Well, Sophie, thank you very much. That was a truly remarkable story. What is the book called?
The book is called Seducing and Killing Nazis, Honey, Truus and Freddie, Dutch Resistance Heroines of World War II. So you can't miss the title Seducing and Killing Nazis, and that's because of their particular strategy.
Thank you so much.
Well, thank you for having me.
I feel the hand of history upon our shoulders.
All this tradition of our school history, our songs, this part of the history of our country, all were gone and finished and liquidated.
One child, one teacher, one book, and one pen can change the world.
He tells us what is possible, not just in the pages of history books, but in our own lives as well.
I have faith in you.
Hope you enjoyed the podcast. Just before you go, bit of a favour to ask. I totally understand if you don't want to become a subscriber or pay me any cash money. Makes sense. But if you could just do me a favour, it's for free. Go to iTunes or wherever you get your podcast. If you give it a 5-star rating and give it an absolutely glowing review, purge yourself, give it a glowing review. I'd really appreciate that. It's a tough world out there. Law of the jungle out there. And I need all the fire support I can get. So that will boost it up the charts. It's so tiresome. But if you could do it, I'd be very, very grateful. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Dan Snow's History Hit. Please follow this show wherever you get your podcasts. It really helps us and you'll be doing us a big favour. Don't forget, you can also listen to all of these podcasts ad-free and watch hundreds of TV documentaries when you subscribe at historyhit.com/subscribe. As a special gift, you can also get your first 3 months for just £1 a month when you use code DANSNOW at checkout.